It's 1 o'clock GMT. Hello, I'm Roger Hearing, and this is Business Matters on the BBC World Service. We're connecting the time zones. Today we're live in Singapore and Silicon Valley. And I'll be joined throughout the programme by two guests on opposite sides of the Pacific. Alison van Diggelen, host of the radio programme Fresh Dialogues, who's joining us from Silicon Valley, California. And Nisid Hajjari, Asia editor for Bloomberg View, who's joining us from Singapore. So, Nisid, I'll say good morning to you.
Good morning, Roger.
And you're very welcome once again to the programme. And right across the other side of the Pacific, Alison, very good evening to you.
Good evening, Roger. Great to join you.
Good to have you there. Now, Alison, I know that where you are in Silicon Valley, of course, it's very famous as a place where many of the most cutting-edge developments are going on in terms of high tech. And I gather you've discovered, appropriately enough, around the beginning of St. Patrick's Day, a little bit of a Celtic fringe that has quite an influence there. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. Irish immigrants have been in California since the gold rush days. I went looking for the Irish in Silicon Valley and found that you can take the people out of Ireland. You can even take their pubs, but you can't take Ireland out of the people. Nevertheless, a new generation of Irish tech immigrants are less nostalgic for the past and are now redefining what being Irish means. They bond over mindset, not heritage, big dreams, and an openness to new ideas and cultures. So I started my quest at Trinity Cathedral in San Jose, where a celebration of St. Patrick's Day and the Dublin Sister City program was in full swing.
Of their new homeland, 33 million U.S. residents claim Irish ancestry. That's over four times the population of Ireland. With 2.5 million, California has the highest Irish population of any state. It's not surprising then that the Irish are making their mark in Silicon Valley. Is it the luck of the Irish or something else? Meet Owen McCabe, CEO of Intercom, a fast-growing startup for business messaging. He and his three Irish co-founders have found a sense of belonging among the software and silicon of the valley.
One of the most magic things about this place is that it does allow you to think big. We're social beings. We're all looking for the appreciation and respect, if not love, of the people around us.
He admits to having a chip on his shoulder, an urgency to prove himself. How has being Irish helped grow the business?
The humility goes a long way here in the valley because there's a lot of hubris. People are damn good at selling themselves. And so it's a breath of fresh air when people admit that they're flawed. That natural humility, that vulnerability, goes a long, 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 long way. They want to be successful on the basis of their merits. And so what you don't find often is people trying to play, for example, that Irish card.
Dave Burke, a Dubliner who's now a VP at Google, says his formula for success is seeking out challenges that are uncomfortably exciting. But does he seek out Irish techies for his 1,000-strong team?
We're looking for not really the country culture, but the outlook and perspective culture, right? That sort of energy and that interest in making an impact and being smart. And we want to get the best and brightest people from all around the world. We want diversity. That is antagonistic with the sort of nationalism perspective. Nationalism looks very backward, right? And it looks unsustainable. It's frightening, and it doesn't readily compute with people.
But Burke says some old traditions endure, especially on St. Patrick's Day.
Guinness, yeah, a meal of Guinness.
Talking of drinks, some immigrants were so determined to bring a wee bit of old Ireland to California, that's literally what they did.
Pint of Guinness, $8.
That looks good. I've come to the Flaherty Irish Bar in San Jose to meet the owner, Mario Flaherty.
So this is an authentic Irish pub. Came on a boat from Ireland. Everything you see, everything. The signs, the pictures, the bar, the stools, everything.
Today it's a landmark in Silicon Valley and ground central for St. Patrick's Day festivities in the South Bay.
Just a little place that I call home. Oh, Dublin can be heaven. With coffee at 11 and a stroll down Stephen Green.
So that was Mark Finn, who joined Mario Flaherty in a little duet for me. They were a little shy at first, but they got quite into it, Roger.
And I'm sure you did too. But Alison, it's an interesting thing. Where you are, do you get a perception as to what different ethnic groups there are in Silicon Valley, and sort of which are the most prominent ones? I mean, is there a dominant one? Are there particular areas that particular groups of people seem to work more in? Does it work that way?
Well, here in San Jose, you know, it's the capital of Silicon Valley. When I became a citizen here in 2001, the largest group visible was actually the Vietnamese. There are a lot of cultures. I mean, it's a bit like London. You know, you walk down the street and you see people from all over the world. But of course, around St. Patrick's Day, everyone, you know, the Irish and everyone comes out. There'll be a lot of celebrations starting tonight, actually, at O'Flaherty's. They have a lot of activities on, dancing and whatnot. But I love this open-mindedness that I found among these tech workers.
And they allow the Scots, obviously, like yourself, to get involved a little bit too.
Well, we're all Celts, right? So I could have chatted with these Irish people all day.
Ooh, now, Nisid, we shouldn't leave you out of all this, because one thing that's pretty been very clear to me, certainly from doing interviews with people in Silicon Valley over the years, has been obviously a very, very large number of Asian people living there and working there, and increasingly so. I mean, is it something you think that's at the core, that the move towards high tech has brought a lot of Asians into that part of America?
Oh, definitely. And actually, not even just in that part of America. I mean, China and India now send more immigrants to the U.S. than Mexico or any other country do. They're the top two nations. So it's more visible in Silicon Valley, and Silicon Valley entrepreneurs, immigrant entrepreneurs, are particularly visible. They're responsible for more than half of the billion-dollar startups in the U.S. So it is a critically important part of the world for them. And it is a worry, the changing attitudes now towards H-1B visas and so on are turning off a lot of people here about the idea of going to the U.S.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? The problems there have been, the bans of various kinds on people coming in, potentially at least, could have an effect there. But let's see something else on this, Nisi, which I think is interesting, is why do you think it is that people from Asia, from the Indian subcontinent, from where you are now in Asia, are particularly drawn to high-tech industries and seem to be, in many cases, at the cutting edge of really pushing that industry forward? Is it something to do with education? What do you think it is?
Yeah, I mean, countries here are traditionally strong in math and science fields, the so-called STEM fields. India in particular, the software industry was able to grow because it was one of the few industries that was not heavily regulated by the government under the so-called license Raj. So, you know, there's always this saying that the industry grew at night, you know, sort of out of the purview of the government in Delhi. And then, you know, once you produce these people, you have strong engineering schools, strong IT companies, then you've got a cheap labor force that, you know, can either work there or the best and brightest can be drawn to the U.S.
Well, that's an interesting point in itself. Is there not a resentment that the best and brightest sometimes are drawn away, and that the homegrown industry, which is very strong, of course, in itself, but maybe loses the top people to other countries?
I wouldn't say resentment. I mean, these countries, China in particular, are making a big effort to try and get these people back. And in fact, the new attitude in the U.S. is helping their cause, because they can offer resources and jobs and a welcoming atmosphere that the U.S. maybe can't right now. So, you know, there is a sense that somehow these people may come back eventually. And in the meantime, they do often maintain contacts in a way that wasn't possible, say, in the 1960s when my parents came to the U.S. You know, you couldn't sort of hop back and forth to India several times a year the way people can do now.
Alison, let's come back to that point about the effect, I guess, of current situations and perhaps, you know, whether the xenophobia is imagined or is real in somewhere like Silicon Valley, or the sense perhaps that guest workers, that people coming in, aren't getting the same kind of welcome that they used to.
Absolutely. In fact, there's an interesting anecdote from my interview with Owen McCabe at Intercom. He has about 500 employees, and almost half between San Francisco and Dublin, split in half approximately. And he talked to me about this proposed Muslim travel ban, and he's talked with his Muslim employees about the fact that the door is open if they would rather relocate to the Dublin office and do the same work they're doing, then Intercom will help them do that. So that's one anecdote of, you know, something which could be, you know, a widespread phenomenon that could impact America's competitiveness.
That is
not
really
just
interesting,
for jobs,
isn't it?
But for education too. I've heard anecdotally about PhD candidates considering the US versus other options around the world, and with Muslim travel bans and just the general xenophobia, it's not a good thing for American competitiveness.
But are businesses there in Silicon Valley seriously worried about this? Because as we've said, with a lot of the people coming from perhaps countries where which might attract that kind of difficulty with US immigration officials, it could be a real problem for them if they want to keep at the cutting edge of technology.
Well, I'm sure you probably saw either videos or photographs last month when the first travel ban was proposed, Donald Trump's executive order. People came out of offices in high-tech firms all over Silicon Valley to protest because it's their work colleagues that are impacted immediately by this travel ban. So, of course, suddenly it's personal. It's not just this far-off thing, targeting just the Mexicans, for example. It's suddenly hit home, and these tech companies are very concerned. David Burke talked to me about not just Google, Apple, Facebook, they're all concerned, and the leadership is planning to lean over backwards to create a welcoming, open culture for employees. They want the best in the world, so of course they want to keep the door open. So there's definitely conflict here between the administration and what's best for the tech community.
Miss it, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, it's at this moment, I suppose, anecdotal, and the US government would say, well, they don't object to people coming in to work. But do you detect from people who are travelling in and out of the US a sense of a feeling of lack of welcome? And perhaps where you are, perhaps people saying, well, we'll work on that, we'll provide the welcome, and we can have the best people.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it's, as you say, it's anecdotal, but you hear these stories over and over again of people traveling into the U.S., sometimes even U.S. citizens being stopped and being questioned and having their phones checked and being asked about their political views and so on. And the more you hear about this, the more you start to question, well, do I really need to go there for that business trip? Do I need to be doing business there? Do I want to send my kids there? I mean, after these shootings of Indians and Indian Americans in the U.S.
The Kansas City shootings, I think, wasn't it?
Exactly, right. One killed in Kansas and another one shot just outside Seattle. That was a huge story in India, much bigger than it played in the U.S. And a lot of parents are wondering about whether or not they want to send their kids to the U.S. for school.
Yeah, the changes that are being brought about through intentionally or otherwise, the way things are going in America at the moment, having possible knock-on economic effects. We'll report, of course, a lot more on that, I guess, as it becomes apparent in the months to come.